It is time for the Media Beat from David Tereshchuk, his weekly review of media coverage for Robinhood Radio and exclusive to Robinhood Radio. David is a multimedia and international journalist with his own online column at themediabeat.us. And as a special correspondent since 2012, he has contributed TV reports to the PBS network, mostly on ethical issues. Here's David.
This is David Tereshchuk with the Media Beat for the weekend beginning August 2nd, 2024. I've been taking a break in a place far removed from my home base in the media capital of the world, New York City. And I have to say, rural Maine, our most northeastern state, offers a perspective not always taken into full account by our nation's mainstream media. The half-dozen traditional states of New England are generally seen as Democrat blue, but Maine is more a middling shade of purple, I'd say. Of its United States senators, one is Republican, though a so-called moderate example of the species, Susan Collins. Moderate maybe, but she's combative enough to have this week sharply attacked President Biden's proposals for term limits on the Supreme Court and an enforceable code of ethics for its members, too. On the grounds, she insisted, that the proposals weakened the independence, yes, the independence of the court, and were what she called disrespectful to the conservative-weighted bench. Maine's other senator is an independent, Angus King. He's a former governor who in 2020 angrily critiqued the then-Trump administration's handling of COVID, and so prompted Trump himself to describe King as worse than any Democrat. More dispassionate assessments tend to describe King as a centrist, and indeed, while caucusing with Democrats, he has also been known to vote with Republicans, as he did to block the Democrats' Green New Deal in the Senate. In the U.S. House, Maine has only two representatives, given its rather sparse population compared with its substantial geographic size, and they're both Democrats. But one of them, Jared Golden, felt compelled to vote, along with a tiny handful, five, of his fellow Democrats from right-leaning districts, in support of the Republicans' House resolution condemning Vice President Kamala Harris, now, of course, the presumptive presidential candidate, for her, quote, failure to secure the United States border, unquote. And Congressman Goldman was last week reported saying he would still absolutely not, his words, commit to voting for Harris in November. To account for Golden not towing his party's national leadership line, I can perhaps best cite a seasoned political reporter in the Maine state capital, Augusta, who spoke to me off the record, saying, "These Maine officials have electorates that are only spasmodically urban. They're mainly rural, and their man is Trump." The reporter and I also swapped our separate, similar anecdotes of driving for miles and miles in this state's network of country roads and seeing only Trump-supporting placards. Less anecdotally, I should also recall, as a matter of public record, that Representative Golden's district, which is Maine's second district and the more northerly of the two, voted substantially for Trump in 2020, 7 percentage points more than Biden. America's urban versus rural divide inevitably features large in the 2024 electoral race. The Trump campaign is heavily stressing Harris's identity as a San Francisco liberal. That's when it's not inevitably dog-whistling about her blackness, her gender, and, totally untruthfully, her supposed childlessness. She, of course, has raised children, and, rather sweetly, her stepdaughters call her Momola, as you might remember from stories when she first came to public prominence. Ironically, it's been the city slicker from the other coast, Trump, a New York real estate dealer at that, who seemed to be trying to redress any potential overly citified look for the Republican ticket. It played a sizable part in his choosing for his running mate, J.D. Vance, author of the infamous memoir, or tract, Hillbilly Elegy, and nowadays a U.S. Senator for Ohio since writing the book. But that choice of Trump's has been rebounding on the campaign somewhat, since the social media cosmos, as well as mainstream media, is now echoing again and again with those remarks Vance made in the not-so-distant past about his new idol. As we all now know, if we didn't already, Vance described Trump variously as an idiot, morally reprehensible, bad for the American working class, and even likened him, reportedly and in private, to Adolf Hitler. Vance has thus proved to be a splendid target for that busy Harris surrogate, Biden's transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg. The one-time Mayor Pete from South Bend, Indiana, has gained a joyous reputation among Democrats as their best Fox News whisperer for his uncanny ability to go on that ultra-partisan network and play it at its own game, and win, too. It was actually, though, on another network, HBO, that Buttigieg understandably stressed some kinship with Vance, or certainly understanding of him as a fellow Midwesterner, and also pointed out to the host Bill Maher just how deeply venomous Vance's description was of Trump as, quote, an opioid. First, he said it was a strange way to describe a person, gaining big laughs from the studio audience, but he went on to say, and I'll quote him directly, "For somebody whose identity is that they're connected to Appalachia, which has an opioid crisis, that really is the darkest thing you could possibly say about Donald Trump, at least in public." In the interest of being fair and balanced, as Fox News itself once upon a time used to say, I should also report Vance's own apology, if that's what it was, for having critiqued Trump in that disdainful, damning manner. Quote, "I did say those critical things, and I regret them, and I regret being wrong about the guy." The self-styled Appalachian Vance, albeit since his beginnings gaining a Yale law degree and a stint as a Silicon Valley venture capitalist, has also described himself to the Republican National Convention, among other audiences, as, quote, "a working-class boy born far from the halls of power." There wasn't exactly a log cabin involved, but that's quite a label to be brandished by someone aspiring to the number two position in the White House. Vice President Harris, by stepping up to nominee for the number one position, has of course automatically created a vacancy for someone to go head-to-head with the supposedly working-class Vance. Quite a clutch of prospects stepped forward, several Democratic governors to the fore. But few possible seem to have excited as much media interest as Senator Mark Kelly. He represents a battleground state, Arizona, no mean feat for a Democrat. He has had a stellar career in media terms as a Navy combat pilot flying 39 missions during Operation Desert Storm, and then a NASA astronaut, along with, fascinatingly enough, his identical brother Scott Kelly. But working class, well, consider his parentage. Kelly, a name that's inevitably, recognizably Irish. And in fact, both parents were born Bronx Irish, and both became police officers in New Jersey. When the twins were growing up, their mother Patty gained a reputation for breaking up bar fights. She was the first female cop on the West Orange Force, working hard to pass the then men-only fitness test. Before that, she'd been a prison guard. Many crisscrossing factors will have played into Vice President Harris's hurriedly conducted consideration of her choice, but there's undoubtedly been a surge of support for Kelly. No matter who ends up as the second name on the ticket, everyone is going to know more about him. No media profile published so far has omitted the fact that he's married to former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. Together, the couple recently welcomed into the world their first grandchild, born to Kelly's elder daughter from his previous marriage. It's maybe uncomfortable to point out, but it's very resonant all the same, that there is among all these biographical details an answer to one of J.D. Vance's more specious political attacks, that peculiar condemnation of Democrats who are, in his mind, childless. Gabby Giffords took to social media this week to say directly to Vance, Vice President Kamala Harris is a proud mom of two remarkable stepchildren, and so am I. It's also a measure of our ugly, brutal times that when still a member of Congress, Gabby Giffords, who so far had no children of her own with Kelly, was horribly injured, we must all remember that, by a would-be assassin. So the issues of political violence and parenthood have gotten braided together in a grim and deeply distressing way. As Giffords also said to Vance in her posting, "Mark Kelly and I were trying to have a baby through IVF before I was shot, and that dream was stolen from us. To suggest we are somehow lesser is disgraceful." That's all from the Media Beat this week. I'll be reporting again next week from rural America at the northern end of the Appalachia Trail, in fact.
Thank you very much, David. We will talk to you next week. David can be found at themediabeat.us.